Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. This is David Murphy, your host for this evening podcast. We are waiting on a few more people to come aboard, but we, you know, we're gonna get this party started no matter what. We, you know, we go with or without. Again, I want to welcome to our podcast. We are streaming live on Facebook. We are also on Blog Talk Radio. And we really have a hot topic tonight. It's an important thing, not only for here locally in Baltimore, but nationwide. There's a lot of things that is has been, but it's a little bit more blatant than it used to be. At least they used to try to do things undercover. But then the thing that they're doing today, especially when it comes to education, is right up in our face. What's happening in Florida, Baltimore, and around other parts of the country, there's attack on our educational system. But before we get into that, I'm going to bring my partner and co-host on, Satawi Jahi. He's a little under the weather, so bear with my brother. Brother Satawi, you got it, sir.
All right. Thank you, David. We do each and every time we come on here, we do a reading from Daily Motivations of African-American Success, written by Mr. Dennis Kimbrough, and also the author of Think and Grow Rich in Black Choice, which is a blueprint eliminating poverty in our families. The reading for the night goes like this. February 6th, slim and none. It doesn't matter what you're trying to accomplish. It's a matter of discipline. I was determined to discover what life held for me beyond the inner city streets. Wilma Rudolph, Olympic champion. There's a breathtaking statue in Mexico that bears the unusual title, In Spite Of. The name was given to honor the sculptor rather than the subject in the stone. During the time the sculptor was carving the statue, he suffered a tragic accident and lost his right hand. Nonetheless, he was determined to finish the project that he learned how to chisel with his left hand. Appropriately enough, the statue was entitled In Spite Of, because in spite of his handicap, the sculptor managed to compete in moving work of art. In spite of their blindness, Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder sang and continued to entertain millions. In spite of difficulty in childhood, Oprah Winfrey went on to become television's number one talk show host. Despite a lack of contacts or connections, while Spike Lee and Robert Townsend persevered to produce numerous box office hits. In spite of losing his legs in Vietnam, Bill Demery overcame a host of physical challenges and motivates others to do their best. In spite of racism and bitter poverty, both Mary McLeod Bethune and Marvin Collins transformed the world of ignorance and literacy into one of the academic excellence self-respect. In spite of being blind, abused, orphaned, poor, uneducated, others have overcome, excelled, and triumphed, and so can you. I will reach my goals in spite of the obstacles. Yes, I got many obstacles out there, and they keep creating new ones each and every day. And in spite of, we have to keep pushing forward. Back to you, Dave.
Okay, thank you, sir. I appreciate that, and hope you feel better, sir.
All right, thank you.
But you're a trooper, you know, that's what soldiers do, no matter what, wounded, whatever, they show up. And I appreciate you, sir. But again, we're still hoping our guests will come on. We're going to get this thing started. You know, again, I want to welcome those who are on Blog Talk Radio as well as Facebook Live. And tonight, I put a warning out there. I belong to a group called Black Men Unifying Black Men, and we had a couple of guests this past Saturday. One of them was Carl Nelson from the radio broadcast. And then we also have a brother came in there by the name of Edwin Advent, who runs a charter school. And he brought some alarming message to us about what's happening to his school. And that's what I want to, you know, have him on so we can discuss that issue. But we have a couple other people on, you know, we're going to talk about this thing anyway. Hopefully he'll come on in time. I know the brother's busy, and he's in, they might say crisis mode, but, you know, he's a soldier. I've been knowing this brother for quite a few years, and he's not run to shrink or shy away from a challenge. But in any case, it does take the village to do what need to be done when it comes to educating our children, preparing future, and what happens to, you know, what's currently going on in the educational system, what has been going on in the educational system, is nothing to be what they might say, be real proud about, you know. But in any case, you know, everything can stand for improvement. But when it comes to the point where there's people in our community that are making great strides and helping our young people go to another level, and then for various reasons, certain people or powers to be want to use their strength to shut people down because of this reason or that reason. And so we wanted to have a discussion about that tonight, and we will. But before we get started, I want to bring a few people, and I want to just recognize a few people. We have Bill Gooden on here tonight with us. We have Beverly Williams here tonight. We have Reverend Malalamu Kevin. And we have Vernon Streeter, Dr. Leroy McKenzie, and Satavi Jahi with us tonight. That's enough to get us started. So, Brother Dr. Leroy McKenzie, can you unmute yourself, sir? And this brother is involved with various organizations, and he's going to enlighten us about, you know, something that's taking place, because he's associated with the brother I just spoke about, because this brother is one of the founding members of Black Professional Men, and Dr. Leroy McKenzie is a member of that organization, as well as one of the editors in the paper. So, Dr. McKenzie, how are you doing this evening, sir?
Hey, I'm good. How about everybody? How's everybody doing this evening?
All right. Now, before I get you started, but as you see, our guest is on board with us. And I'm going to let him, I'm going to introduce him. First of all, you can introduce him right now, but I'm going to introduce him as well. And you go ahead and just introduce him, what you know about this strong brother.
Well, I just want to say thanks for having, you know, being able to do this evening. I know the Black Men Unifying Black Men this weekend, the event that you had that we have, the first Saturday of each month, which is a phenomenal event, and just everything. It's good to see brothers come when we received this information about Brother Avant's school. He's going to talk about that, the Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys. I was just like, oh, what in the world can I do to be able to assist, to be able to get this word out and to be able to make sure that these young men have the access to the education that they need. So I've known Brother Edwin for some years now, a phenomenal, phenomenal gentleman, just outstanding. When I think of strong Black men, I think of him. I think of the foundation of the Black Professional Men. And I got it on tonight. But I think that the organization has been around for 31, 32 years now, and just them taking a hold of what it is, along with the other organizations that are doing what we do around the city to make our city better and to make it better for that next generation. So I just wanted to do my part. I contacted you to be able to say, hey, is there anything that we can do to be able to get this word out, to let them know that it's unacceptable. For something like this to happen, it's unacceptable. So I wanted to see if he was available. He said yes. So I wanted to make sure that he had the opportunity. So I'm gonna turn it over to him and let him tell us about himself, but then also to tell us about Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys. So, Brother Edwin.
Well, before you do that, let me just say a few words about this brother first. You know, I don't know if he remembers, because he's still a young man to me, but. But he's been around the block once or twice. And I remember him when he first came out of college. And he was an entrepreneur then. And, you know, he was always innovative, you know, always on the front line. And I don't know if he recalled back in them days, he had a business where he was selling condoms.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, black from a black, you know, and that was impressive. Especially today, it's really impressive, you know. But in any case, but you know, he was organizing students, and, you know, out in the park and things like that. And I was impressed with that brother then, and I'm still impressed with this brother now. See, you know, we can talk a lot of stuff. You know, a lot of people talk this, but documentation be conversation any day. And this brother has been on the front lines ever since I met him. You know, he's very innovative. And he started so many things, man. You know, I remember he took over the magazine. I remember when, you know, Black Professional Men's Guide started back in the day. So this brother, you know, he got an impressive resume. But today, we're here to talk about a serious matter that he's confronting, not only here in Baltimore, Florida, and all over the place that we're being attacked. You know, even though I remember Carter G. Bush and Bruno, the miseducation of a Negro. And yet they still have been missing. Now they just blatant. Now they just want to take that, even miseducate. They want to take that away from us now, you know. But in any case, I'm introducing you to this brother. Brother Edwin A. Van, how you doing, sir?
I'm fantastic, my brother. It's always good to be in your company, man. God is so good. I'm humbled to be in here with you soldiers. And you guys don't know, man. I watch you. I watch Brother Leroy, all you brothers, man, doing what you do. Brother Bill Goodman's on here. Just outstanding leaders that I have just always admired quietly. Like, just I just try to be amongst the numbers on you brothers. It's just, you know, I've just been honored and humbled to be a soldier in the vineyard with all of y'all. And so thank you very much for having me tonight to be able to share a little bit about what's going on. As you guys mentioned, now I am the president and CEO of the Five Smooth Stones Foundation, and we are the operators of the Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys. And so Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys is a charter school in Baltimore City. We're serving primarily African-American young men from fourth grade to eighth grade. We have right now about 350 boys in our school. And it's down since the pandemic. We normally would be up around 480 boys. But right now we're at 350 fourth through eighth grade boys that we are getting prepared for college. And I tell people all the time that I'm unapologetic about what our mission is. Our mission is to educate young black men to get them to college because we need more black professionals out here. You know, I agree that there are plenty of you know, guys who can make money doing the trades, you know, whether it's HVAC work, you know, refrigeration, masonry, they can do computer programming, all those type of things I think are wonderful. And I would love for all black men to take advantage of all of those avenues. But what we're about at Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys is we're preparing boys so that they can get into the most competitive high schools that will lead them to go to college. Some simple facts. At the end of the day, if you look at it, black people get the best health results when they have black doctors. More black students go to college when they're educated by black educators. We just get better outcomes from each other, for each other's lives, when we're treated by each other. But the fact of the matter is, there's not enough black doctors. There's not enough black dentists. There's not enough black engineers. There's not enough black lawyers. And in order to get into any of those fields, you need a college degree. And so our mission, out of all the schools in the city, there's 31 charter schools in the city, and there's tons more of schools that are public schools. Our mission is to get black boys prepared to go to college. And so far, we've been getting it done. We opened our doors in 2015. Just a little history about Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys. Like you guys have mentioned, I'm one of the founders of Black Professional Men. And we started Black Professional Men in 1991, along with myself, a brother named Scott Phillips, and another brother named Drew Hawkins. We incorporated Black Professional Men, but we joined a bunch of brothers who had met with then Mayor Kurt Schmoke for a fundraiser that we did, and it was all young black male professionals. And the mayor challenged us. We were saying, "Mayor, what are you going to do about the murder? And what are you going to do about the incarceration of black men?" He said, "What are you guys going to do?" Are you guys organized? Can I even come to you? You know, you know, I don't know if you guys have an organization or something. He said, but people are always asking me when I'm telling them you need to put more black men, more black people on your board. You need to hire more black people and men. And the white people come to him and say, well, where are they? And he said, I need to be able to turn to an organization and say to you guys, hey, there's an opportunity. And so Scott and I came out of that fundraiser and said, well, yo, we need to organize. And that's how Black Professional Men was born. And that was 1991. And the mission was to ensure the future of the African-American male. That has always been the mission of Black Professional Men, to ensure the future of the African-American male. And so how do we do it? By any means necessary. First, it was about each other. How do we lift each other up in our own professions, help each other get jobs, help each other get into graduate school, help each other if they're going to run for office? How do we help each other? Then how do we help the rest of the community? And so we very early on started mentoring young brothers. At Lombard Middle School was the first school that we started mentoring young brothers. Back in 1992, we started mentoring young brothers. And shortly thereafter, in 1993, we kicked off the Rays of Hope Awards and Scholarship Breakfast. And that's when we started giving scholarships to young brothers. Since we started that, we mentored or spoken to over 3,000 young brothers, and we've given out 250 scholarships to young black men going to college since that time. So that organization has been around for 30 plus years now. But while I was in those schools mentoring those boys, I would always be dumbfounded about the madness and the chaos that I thought was going on in the hallways and in the classrooms. The disrespect, the cursing from young children to adults, you know, the young boys just playing games and stuff. And I was like, you know what, man, the only way we're going to help these boys, we need to open our own schools. And so I had this vision. I really wanted to start like our own boarding schools, like an hour and a half outside the city, get a campus and scoop up as many boys as we could and take them away from this environment so they wouldn't, you know, keep going back to the same madness at home. And I wanted to deconstruct and reconstruct these young men so that we could program them for greatness. But the cost was pretty exorbitant, right, to be able to do that. And we didn't quite have it. Though I had built other businesses like Heart and Soul Magazine and others, you know, it didn't give me the billions of dollars that I needed to go and just create a school and write that. And so I kept thinking, how can we get this done? Then somebody introduced me, Diane Bell McCoy from Associated Black Charities. I used to serve on that board, and I would meet with her every now and then, and I sat down and was telling her about what I was doing, and I was building a television network. After I sold Heart and Soul Magazine, I was building a television network that we eventually launched called Soul of the South Television. I said, I'm working on this, Diane, to launch this TV thing, but the thing that's really on my heart is I want to start a school for black boys. And she said, I got somebody you have to meet. And she introduced me to this brother named Jack Johnson Pinnell. And Jack originally is from Dayton, Ohio, but he had been in this region. He is a lawyer by training, but he had worked on Capitol Hill. He worked in D.C. government, but he came to Baltimore because he had this vision to create a charter school called Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys. And so Diane introduced the two of us. Once he shared with me his vision for this school, I said, there you go. I'm like this. I don't have to be the guy that came up with the idea. I can be the guy who jumps on board and help you with your vision to make it happen. I don't have to reinvent the wheel. So this brother had put together the plan. I thought he was a brilliant brother. He had vision, and I decided to help him. So in 2011, I jumped on board with him, and I worked with him and joined on his board. And eventually, we opened Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys in 2015 with 4th through 6th grade, 168 boys. And we began educating them there. And then each year we added another grade. We added a 7th grade, and then we added an 8th grade. And it was at that time, originally we were thinking we were going to go all the way to 12th grade. But then I realized, like, you know what? By the time we got to 8th grade, I said, you know, I'm not liking the test scores of our younger boys. And now I understand why I don't. It's because we're taking them at 4th grade. By the time we get boys at 4th grade, they have already picked up all the bad habits that, you know, like if they weren't being taught really well from pre-K and kindergarten, you see the results by the time they get to you in the 4th grade. So we wind up having to do a lot of remedial work to help bring these boys up. And so that slowed down the vision of going to a high school. And I said to my board, I said, you know what, guys, as opposed to keep going up, if we go any direction, why don't we go down to pre-K so that we can get them as babies and then raise them up ourselves and raise them up in the collegiate way. So that still remains a vision of ours. However, you know, over the course of years, we started graduating boys. And in 2018, we graduated our first class. We call them the Vanguard class. We graduated about 79 boys in that class, and they went on to different high schools. We had several that went to Poly, several that went to City, a couple that went to Baltimore School for the Arts, several that went to Dunbar, and then we got several of them in schools like Loyola Blakefield, Boys Latin, and then we sent some off to boarding school. But then we did have a nice contingent of them that went to Mervo and some other schools, but we got a lot of our boys into college prep high schools, and that was in 2018. That class, the Vanguard class, just graduated from high school last June. And of that class, 90% of the boys graduated on time. And that's a huge accomplishment, because if you all follow the statistics here in Baltimore, typically African-American males in Baltimore graduate high school in 4 years at about 64%. So to be at 90% was amazing. And then out of those boys that did graduate, over 50% of them went on to college. So now we got boys in Morehouse, Morgan, UMES. We got them at Frostburg. We have them at University of Maryland, Baltimore County. We got boys at Loyola University. So, you know, those boys that started off with us as little boys persisted through high school. And so what was interesting is, how do we get boys who graduate from us in eighth grade to persist and graduate at the 90% rate? It's the work that we're doing while they're with us. Now, what's even more exciting is the following class, the class of 2019 that graduated from our school, are graduating this June. So we're already tracking them. We have a whole department that tracks our boys. We know that 97% of our boys in this class are graduating already. We already know that they're graduating, and of that class, 50% of them have been accepted to colleges. And so we know we got a whole nother crew of boys getting ready to go to college. So 97%. So they graduated from us in 2019, but they persisted and graduated from high school at 97% rate. Still, the city rate for black boys is 64%. So we're accomplishing the mission that we're on. We're getting black boys to get ready to graduate and go to college. And so we're excited about that. Now, what happens, for those of you who don't know about charter schools, it isn't like they give you a charter and you just keep it forever. They always are doing checkups on you, and you got to get renewed. So when we launched, we had a five-year charter in 2015. That charter ended in 2020. In 2020, we had to apply for renewal. We were renewed on a three-year basis in February of 2020. Guess what happened in March of 2020?
Pandemic.
So we were shut down. Like, you know, basically everybody went home, and we had to educate boys via Zoom meetings. And as you can imagine, that was quite challenging, but we were successful at getting boys to show up on a daily basis at about a 95% rate for that year. Nonetheless, a lot of learning stuff was kind of lost during that year. It was almost kind of like a lost year. The following year was last year. So the first year of our three-year renewal was during the pandemic. Our second year was last year. And if anybody is following what's happening in education, man, last year was a rough year all across the board. The behavior problems were happening every place. Children came back to school retarded in their growth. So they left school as fifth graders. They came back as seventh graders, acting like fifth graders.
Mm.
You know, just retarded in their social development. And so last year was a rugged year, trying to get the kids to settle down, stop fighting, things like that. So we wound up suspending a lot of boys and things like that. But not only that, that wasn't the worst part. Part of the worst part is that a lot of teachers left teaching, you know, just like the great resignation that has happened all over the country in all types of industries, where people, like, after they were at home during the pandemic, they didn't want to go back to work. They just like, I want to work from home. Well, teachers were a lot like that, and a lot of them left the profession. Not only them, but administrators too. So we came back having to struggle to hire and keep teachers. We made it through last year, but I was not happy with the leadership. And at that time, before then, I was on the board of trustees. I was the chairman of the board. For the last 4 years, I was the chairman of the board while Jack Johnson Pinnell, the brother I told you about, who was the visionary, he was the CEO and the executive director of the school. Right before the pandemic started, Jack and I went to Philadelphia looking to open a school in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Collegiate School for Boys. So we had to go through the whole process of applying for the charter in Philadelphia. And Jack moved to Philadelphia during the pandemic and fell in love with Philly and didn't want to come back to Baltimore. Now, we've been going through real challenges because Philadelphia has been anti-charter. They got some charters, but they've been really hard on charters for the last few years. So the original application we did was rejected. Now Jack is in the appeal process, but Jack decided he was going to stay in Philadelphia. And so I decided to come off of the board of directors as a chairman and come into the role of president and CEO of the foundation. And once I did that, I decided that the team that I had in place had to change. So I let go of the principal, the vice principal that we had last year, and I went out and I sought experienced Baltimore principals, because the principals that we had in the prior years, the first one was from D.C., the second one was from Memphis, Tennessee, and the third one's from New York. I'm like, y'all don't understand Baltimore. You know, I had to find that out the hard way. You got Baltimore has its own culture. I figured that I needed to get principals who knew Baltimore. And who better than a brother named Dr. Barney Wilson? If, for those of you who don't know, Dr. Wilson was the first African-American to be the principal at Baltimore Polytechnic Institute. And he served in that role for 6 years. And so he knows what it takes to get into Poly. And what I wanted was somebody who understood the college prep mindset and how we prepare our boys to get into Poly City and the most competitive high schools. And I was able to convince Dr. Wilson, who had been over in Nigeria when I called him. He was in Nigeria running private schools over there for the past 8 years. It just so happened was he was ready to come home too. So coincidentally, I wanted him. He was ready to come home. So I was able to convince him to come back and become our principal. I was also able to get another brother named Mr. Kelvin Bridgers, who used to be the principal at Douglas, but before that, he was the principal at Bluford Drew Jimison. And a lot of you are familiar with that one. That was the first black boys school that Brother Carl Stokes had launched several years ago with Dr. Ann Embry. However, the city shut Bluford Drew Jimison down. And, you know, that was a big hullabaloo. They wound up taking it over and making it a high school. So now the city controls Bluford Drew Jimison, but Brother Carl Stokes was put out. The year that we launched Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys, Brother Carl Stokes launched another boys' school at the same time called Banneker Blake. And we wound up sharing the same building in our first year. And then next year we moved out and he remained there. But when it came time for renewal, we were renewed and Banneker Blake was closed. So that was the second black boys school that was closed by Baltimore City. So here we are now in year three of our three-year renewal. Remember, the first year we were in pandemic, last year we were in turmoil. This is the third year under my new leadership team of Dr. Wilson and Mr. Bridgers and other people that I had to elevate and people that we had to make into teachers because it was so hard to recruit them. We're in this third year, and it's time for renewal, but we just got a notice a week or two ago that Baltimore City Schools is considering making the recommendation of non-renewal for Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys. Even with all the success that we've had with graduating boys and getting them to graduate from high school and going to college, they're telling us because of what I see as some technicalities, they can't recommend us if we automatically went into non-renewal status. So let me tell you what those things are so that I could be clear, because I'm never going to say they're horrible and we're innocent. I got to make sure you understand what's going on. They have a rubric when they do what's called the SER, the school effectiveness review. They do that school effectiveness review last spring. They do it in the year before your last year of a renewal. And they come in and they evaluate you in three different areas: academic performance, culture and climate, and then finance and governance. If you fail any one of those three areas, you automatically go into consideration for non-renewal. Well, we did just fine with academics. We did just fine with the culture and climate. But in the area of finance and governance, we were found to have a problem with what they call operator capacity. And what that means is you have all these different processes and things that you have to do to run the school, like data input, doing suspensions right, things like that. You can get really caught up in that area. And if you get five, what they call five letters of concern or letters of reprimand, that's enough to automatically trigger non-renewal recommendation. Well, we exceeded that this year. And it came in like hot and heavy on us. And I've always wondered, like, God, are they targeting us? So what happened was at the beginning of the year, you know, some of my new people I have working in positions were putting in data incorrectly. It wasn't that we weren't putting in the data on time. She was putting it in incorrectly. And as opposed to North Avenue sending somebody to teach her how to do it right, they gave us a letter of concern. She did it wrong another time. They gave us a letter of reprimand. And so there you go. You got two letters. Then we had some students who acted up, pulled out knives on another student. Dr. Wilson had to suspend these boys. Well, he suspended these boys, and we got a letter of reprimand because he suspended them incorrectly. Back in the day, a principal could just write a suspension, send a boy home. Today, you write a suspension, you got to send it to North Avenue to the Office of Suspensions for them to review it and determine whether or not you can suspend them and for how long you can suspend them. And if you don't do it correctly, apparently they give you letters of reprimand. So we had got two of those. So right there, you got four letters. And then on another occasion, Dr. Wilson showed up on the news when Ivan Bates was shaking hands. He came to our school to shake hands with the boys and on his inauguration day, the news cameras came. We didn't plan it. The news cameras came and they asked, could they speak to somebody? Dr. Wilson spoke on the news. We got a letter of reprimand because he was on the news without asking for permission from North Avenue. So Nate, there you go. That's just a few examples of the type of things that they're using as their reason for non-renewal. Things that to me could have been a phone call. Hey, don't do that again. Or, hey, I'm going to send somebody over to help you with your data input. Or, hey, let me show you how to do the suspensions correctly. As opposed to that, to me, it feels like they've been targeting us and they just wanted to build up a paper case. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I can't say that, hey, we're innocent, that we didn't do anything wrong. We did things wrong. But what I want to share with you all is it was not like, you know, negligence. It was some of it was just total ignorance, where somebody didn't know how to do something correctly. And to me, it could have been, if we're a partner, true partners in educating our children, they could have sent somebody over to help us. So here we are now, and it goes down to this. Next Tuesday on the 14th, Dr. Santelises, the CEO of Baltimore City Schools, will give her recommendation for all the charter schools that are up for renewal. She will give her recommendations to the Board of Commissioners. She can give them a recommendation of renewal for 8 years, for 5 years, or for 3 years, or non-renewal. So she could recommend to them that they not renew us, or she could recommend to them that they give us an 8-year renewal. It's on her. But I met with her last week for about an hour. And she says, Edwin, typically I go with the recommendation of the Charter Advisory Board. And the Charter Advisory Board is the one that did this rubric, and they're the ones who's suggesting that you flipped over into automatic non-renewal status. Typically, I don't go against them. That typically I don't. She can. She has the ability to go against them and make a different recommendation. But typically she doesn't go against them. She says she will take everything under consideration because just like I explained to you all about those letters of reprimand and concern, I explained that to her. And she said, I'll take a look at that. I wasn't aware of them. I'll look at them and I'll take that under advisement. Okay. So she'll make that recommendation on the 14th. On the 16th, next Thursday, we get to present to the Board of Commissioners. However, we only get 4 minutes to make our presentation. So we got to convince that board of commissioners in 4 minutes that they should renew us.
Hey.
The 23rd, the board of commissioners votes as to whether or not they will renew us. So, you know, what we're doing is we're trying to garner support. So tomorrow, the Office of New Initiative, which is the authorizers from North Avenue, will come to our school at 5:30 to talk to our families and the community about what could possibly go down. So they have the responsibility of making the families aware what might happen so that families can know what to do next in case we're not renewed. You know, they can begin to plan for their sons to go someplace else. Or if they want to contest this, they're going to tell them that you have the ability to contest this. What we want to do is make tomorrow a rally. So it's not just our families, but I want the entire community to come and join us and say, this is unacceptable. You know, if we're watching black boys die in the street and go to jail in massive numbers every single year, and there's one common denominator that most people really don't understand is that most of these brothers going to jail or dying in the street have an average reading level of third grade. They mostly are illiterate. I mean, you can go into jail after jail, or you can look at boy after boy who died in the street and see how far they made it in school, what their test scores were. And you'll find one of the common denominators is they can hardly read. And you can see this stuff acting out in the classroom all the time. I see it all the time. The boys who are disruptive, stop the teachers from teaching. Typically, when you dig down deep, you find out the reason why they're that destructive is because they can't read. So they're embarrassed. So they don't want the class to go on because they don't want it to come around where they say, Johnny, it's your turn to read. So they act up, they get out, they walk out of class, they start fights and things like that. It carries over into the streets. We started this school so that we could be a conduit to get those boys past that third grade and make it into college. And we know all of us, most of us on here, I don't know about everybody, but most of us on here actually have gone to college. And we know the difference between the lifestyles of people who actually get a degree and people who don't. The chances of you being able to be employable is much higher. The chances of you being able to build wealth is much higher. And so that's our mission. We're on this mission. We want to keep our school. So we're going to let them know tomorrow when they come that it's unacceptable, that they want to try and close our school. But what we're also asking the community to do is write letters, make phone calls, do whatever they can to send to the Board of Commissioners and say, we must keep Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys open. So I know I've gone on for a while.
No. You explain yourself perfectly. But before you go any further, let me ask, just out of curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you say it's the school board, it's Baltimore City School Board that kind of oversees what happened in the charter schools, right?
Yes. Well,
so is this same board do the same thing with the city schools?
Right. Well, see, the people, this office that's coming tomorrow, the Office of New Initiatives, is what we call the Charter School Authorizer. It's a charter and operator operated schools authorizer. So they're a department of the Department of Education of Baltimore City Public Schools. The Baltimore Board of Commissioners is our school board.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ultimate governing body. They're Dr. Santelices' boss.
Right.
Okay. And so they are ultimately the ones who are the decision makers. They will vote as to whether or not we do this. But to go back to your question, right? I asked this very question. If this was a regular Baltimore City school who made mistakes on entering the data, mm-hmm. who suspended a child incorrectly, would you shut that school down the next year? Would you fire that principal because he made a mistake on submitting a suspension incorrectly, or would you tell them the correct way to do it? Baltimore City wouldn't punish their own schools the way they want to punish a charter school.
Yes, so,
yeah.
Go ahead, bro.
Believe that some is and I, it's not me, but some people believe is that we're too successful, right? If you can actually graduate 97% of black boys in 4 years from high school, if it can be done, how come it's not being done on a wide-scale basis in Baltimore City? And if we can prove that it can get done, we could embarrass the city. That's what some people believe, okay? I'm not going to necessarily say that, but that's what some people believe. So why have us out there setting an example that others aren't being able to repeat, right? And so that's some of the conspiracy theory. I'm not sure, but like I said, I don't come in here to you guys and say we're innocent. We didn't make mistakes. We made but they were mistakes. And Dr. Wilson and Mr. Bridges have been out of being principals in Baltimore City for over 6 years each. So they came back into the system. They know how to be principals, but they got to catch up on the new systems. And to me, this is year one. We have a four-year plan. When they came together, we sat down and put together a four-year plan to take our school to incredible heights. And we're in year one of our plan. We need at least a three-year renewal so we can execute all 4 years. And so that's what we're really looking for. We're going to ask them for 5 more years. You know, we're going to say we need 5 to 8 years to really do what we want to do. And plus, we need you to grant us the ability to open up a pre-K first, second, and third grade, too, so that we can get them as babies and really raise them. That's what we want to say. But the first thing we got to do is get them to renew us. And so that's what we're looking for the community to do and to help us with regards to writing letters, you know, reaching out to their political, you know, leaders, because our boys come from all over the city. So every councilman in district is impacted by our school because we've got boys that come from every city council district. Our city councilwoman is really strong in support of us, Odette Ramos. She's coming out strong to support us. I've been reaching out. I went down to Annapolis. I met with Senator Mary Washington, Delegate Regina Boyce, and Delegate Elizabeth Embry, asking for their support. I talked to Kwaisi and Fume's office today. I'm reaching out to all of the, you know, our political constituency. But, of course, I got to come to the brothers, you know.
Yeah.
Like, this is what we do. We all have been in the trenches fighting for Black men and Black men's, you know, health and well-being. And so, you know, this is just another fight.
Let me ask you this. I got a couple of people I know, you know, for time run out on us.
Yep.
that may want to ask a question or have some suggestions. I'm going to start with Bill Gooden and then go to Michael Johnson, because I know these are some soldiers, man. They've been around as long as you have and longer.
Absolutely.
But I know they're concerned, brothers, and I'm going to try to get many people. Just raise your hand if you have any questions for Brother Avent. But Bill, go ahead, I'll start with you, sir.
Yeah, first, man, let me just say good evening to everybody and good evening to everyone, and thank you for, you know, coming on and, you know, making the presentation. You know, first of all, I guess I'm one of them people that believe that the school system do not want to see us succeed, right? And I'm saying that to say this. Sandalisa is making almost $500,000 a year for Baltimore City Public Schools to fail, right? So to have an example of a school that's actually doing what we're praying to get done sends the wrong message to us in terms of what they want from the school system. So what I'm doing, I'm just encouraging everybody on here tonight to please tell everybody you know to show up tomorrow, because we need to make sure that they keep the school.
Thank you very much, Bill. And I appreciate you calling in on the Larry Young Show this morning as well. Thank you.
All right. Michael Johnson.
You know, this is an easy fight for me. You know, I've been in the school system. I was in the school system for 12 years. I get it. I think that I'm looking at it from a activist point of view, is that, we have to show up tomorrow, and we've done everything. I did talk to Kwaisi's office as well today. His assistant is coming tomorrow, because every elected official that I reached out to today, I let them know that we would be letting them know. It is important that we do one way, and the school committee, his group, his staff does something else. Sandalisa deals with pressure. The school board is only 2 elected, and the rest of them appointed by Brandon Scott.
Mm-hmm.
So you approach the mayor, which is what we did today. We made calls to the mayor's office, because we know that the mayor's office, and it's unfortunate, we would like to say that the school board is Sandalisa's boss. Well, if you look at the history of their votes and the way they do things, she runs the show.
Yeah.
Because most of them are a bunch of kids, don't have young people in the system. Very few of them are actually even from Baltimore. But there's one connection that they all have. They probably have worked for John Hopkins, even Department of Social, you know, so I got all of that. So what our objective is tomorrow is to have as many men and women and children. They're outside tomorrow beginning at 5. And at 5:30, we will have a press conference to go inside and then bring everybody in. But this is all about pressure. If I mean, she left, my friend Edwin, an open-ended point when she says, well, I always pay attention to what the board, the recommendation is. And that's not necessarily true, because at one time they had wanted to keep Carl open, but she had a personal beef with Carl Stokes, and that's how that went. So from our point of view, is very simple. We're going to come there en masse. We're going to take the approach that the school system is not trying to educate black boys. This group is, and we have the statistics that Edwin has given us verbally, and, of course, I had physically, because Edwin knows I've been following them since day one. I'd say proudly I tries to get young people to get up in there if they can. And a few of them have gotten in there. But we've got to be clear that this is a mission that we have to look at. And I think Edwin made the point that it's so clear. If this was a public school system, a public school ran by the school system and had these types of numbers and success, we know they wouldn't be touching them. But then on the other end, if they had these five little hiccups, and that's all they were hiccups, mm-hmm. that occurred, would they be closing them? And we know that they won't. There's a report coming out tonight, and I know everybody's got their own idea about Channel 45, but I want you to watch the show tonight. They're going to name the schools that absolutely none of our young people, passed any tests. And so for tomorrow, Edwin, you know, I'll see you, obviously, but I just want you to be aware that we're taking a very aggressive approach to the school board. We want to embarrass them, and we want to make sure that they recognize that we expect these type of schools not only to remain open, but to increase. And because there is a study out, and if you get a chance, go to the New York Times. It's about maybe 4 or 5 years old, how they said the difference between the way the boys learn and girls learn. Mm-hmm. And so thank you very much, guys.
All right. You know, I appreciate that, Mike. But Brother Edwin, let me ask you, because I listened to the radio program this morning as well on the Larry Young Show. And you brought out some amazing facts that really struck a nerve with me. You were talking about crime and statistics.
Mm-hmm.
And why most of the children, or our young men, the ones who actually get in trouble doing, you know, some of these things out there about their grade levels. Can you kind of expound on that a little bit, please?
Yeah, there's a study. There have been studies done that show the correlation between low reading levels and crime. It's a direct correlation. If the brothers can't read, then they're much more destructive. They're much more prone to have to go out there and kind of fend for themselves. And that fending for themselves often drives them to the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And so our whole thing is, and it's because they can't read. That's just the bottom line. They just can't read. And if they can't read, what else are they going to do? You know? As a matter of fact, if you give me screen sharing ability, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but if you give me screen sharing ability, I'll show you the actual report I'm talking about, because I always like to have backup so that you know that I'm coming from a place of research. So if you allow me to share a screen.
Right before you do that, if you don't mind, because I have to actually switch over to another meeting. I just want you to remember this, guys. The correlation between crime and education is real. There's no question that is real. Our children spend 40 hours a week, if not better, in the school system. And so if we don't think that correlation between schools or good schools or schools that love our children, because if you don't love our children, you're in the wrong business, then you're really missing a boat. Edwin, I'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you very much,
everybody. I've talked to everybody. Thank you. Love you, brothers and sisters.
All right. Love you too, man. Thank you very much. Just quickly, I know you guys got other things to talk about, but I just want to have this on the screen so you can see it. This has literacy statistics, all right? 2/3 of students who cannot read proficiently by the end of the fourth grade will end up in jail or on welfare. 2/3 of the students. The fourth grade is the watershed year. We can predict that if a child is not reading proficiently in the fourth grade, he or she will have approximately a 78% chance of not catching up. And so this, all this information, literacy statistics in juvenile court, 85% of all juveniles who interface with the juvenile court system are functionally illiterate. More than 60% of all prison inmates are functionally illiterate. The penal institution records show that inmates have a 16% chance of returning to prison if they receive illiteracy help, as opposed to 70% who receive no help. This equates to a taxpayer cost of $25,000 per year per inmate, and nearly double that amount. Illiteracy and crime are closely related. The Department of Justice states the link between academic failure and delinquency, violence, and crime is welded to reading failure. Over 70% of inmates in America's prisons cannot read above a fourth grade level. So I say third grade, by the time you hit the fourth grade, you're not reading at that level. And if we're not reading, they're going to fall into the criminal justice system. And they are either going to go to jail or they're going to be victims of crime. And so that's why I'm just so adamant that we have to educate black boys. And unfortunately, too many boys aren't doing well. Michael talked about the statistics that are out now, and this report on Fox 45 is going to come out. I'll be honest with all of you. I will not be surprised if we don't show up on that list, because during pandemic, the statistics took a nosedive just like this. I mean, the number went just like this. All children basically stopped learning for 18 months, and then coming into the following year, it's almost 2 years of a loss of learning. So everybody, my boys, your boy, everybody's children had a lack of learning. And so the statistics came out, the national MCAP results, those are the Maryland, standardized tests, and it's not good. It's not good. But that their schools are like that too. They're not going to close their schools. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, you know, we know how to get them back. You know, our schools, we have peace in our hallways now. We've totally changed our culture and got it back to the collegiate way. Our classrooms are places where children can learn, and we're working hard to bring all of our numbers back up. But it does not look good. It's not pretty. But bottom line, the things that they, like I said, the things that they have hit us with are things they would never close one of their own schools over. And yeah, that's our main point.
And I agree. But, you know, Mr. Edwards, look, we have several people on. I want to give them an opportunity. We have educators on here. We have people who deal with youth on here. Dr. White Peace and Kathleen Murphy, they all, you know, like I say, most of the people on here are authors and things like that. But, you know, if anybody want to ask Mr. Edwin, while we still have him here, any questions or concern about what's going on, because I'm just say this before anyone else speaks. I don't come out much, but I would definitely be there. If God will, I will be there tomorrow myself, because it's more at stake than just the school. That's extremely important. Mm-hmm. But the statistics that you just shared with us, it's so vital, because every child that you have into that school, that's one statistic that won't go that other way. That you know, because like I say, man, one life, just one child,
one
is worth it for me to get up and do something about this. So, you know, brother, I appreciate you. But anybody else before, we shut the door, come on in.
This is Kathleen Murphy. Good evening. Just gotten off another call. I'm sorry I came in late. See, that's Mr. Edwin.
Yes, me.
Mm-hmm. Some of you have heard me say this many, many times. The federal government uses the reading scores of the third grade students to project and plan for their future prisons. Mm-hmm. And as an educator, I read monthly to the students. Now I'm reading virtually, and I'm trying to make a difference. But we need to capture our children at a young age, and they are using that data to build the future prisons. So listen at this. I did an article a few months ago for the paper, where I talked about the crime and being educated and the difference of what we're paying and the outcome and also salaries and what you can make and what kind of jobs you can get and the advantage of getting educated and what kind of education. You know what? As taxpayers, we're going to pay now or later.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it comes down to. It affects us all. The crime affects every community. So we're going to pay now or later. And I just wanted to say that you're right on with that. I did that article several months ago, and I constantly am saying we need to target and pull out our young kids now and introduce them to books. All of you know on the call that no more toy gifts, I give books. That's all.
Excellent. Okay. Excellent.
And you know what else, too? You know, it's a lot at stake. And those who are available, please come out tomorrow. This is crucial. As you already know, it's no question that we need to stand. We don't stand if nobody else will. And we have people from all around the country on this call right now, but if you have people in the Baltimore area, send them out there. Tell them that this is urgent. That's why I put in the title of urgent. This is not a drill. This is warfare. There's no children's lives are at stake. And we have a brother like that pretty much dedicated his life and done a remarkable job. And they, like I say, they nitpicking and doing all kinds of things to discourage. Like I say, it's not against the school. That's against us. That's what I see it. It's against us as a whole. And so anyone else before we shut it down? Bill, anybody else?
The only thing I want to say, David, is this. I want to remind everybody that tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, then Brother Edwin will be on Carl Nelson's show.
Okay.
10, so I'm asking everybody to tune in. But the bottom line is that people need to show up, right? Like,
yeah.
I say, if Sandalisa is making $500,000 a year for failing schools, then it's no justification talking about closing the school that's setting standards that we want to see. So I'm just saying all of us need to do what we can, encourage other people to show up, and make sure that it's standing room only at that facility.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Please do. And what I've also done is in the chat, I've put a link to a letter of support. If you would like to write a letter of support and you don't know what to say, just click on the link. It'll take you right to a template where we've already have it written out. You can take that template. You can manipulate it and change the words so it fits your message. But pretty much if you just put your name and stuff on that one, we would really, truly appreciate that. And, you know, send me a copy. I'll put my email address there, too. So you can send it to North Avenue, but also please send me a copy because we're building a whole book that we will be presenting to all of the different members of the board. And in that book, it will have a copy of every letter that we collect of everybody who's supporting us. So we really want them to know. And our goal is to get over 200 letters of support. We're hoping we can get even more. The address, I put the address in there as well. It's 2525 Kirk Avenue tomorrow at 5 o'clock. And we're looking to get as much of the community out as we can.
Okay. Dr. McKenzie, you want to share something?
Yeah, just real quick. As Brother Bill mentioned about Brother Edwin being on the show tomorrow morning, he's also going to be at 9:30 on Good Morning to the Leader in You at 9:30 to just talk about this is how urgent this is, and we want to make sure that we let everybody know about what's going on with the Baltimore Collegiate Schools for Men. But Brother Edwin, I want to ask you this: that data that you just gave, is that also the data that Ms. Kathleen was talking about that they use in order to be able to say, hey, here's why we're building, you know, these prisons? And then you all, I mean, because you all seem to have a plan for how to combat that. You all have said, hey, here's the problem. We have the solution to it. Is that kind of what the data that they're using in order to be able to bring those statistics or to justify building those prisons?
Absolutely. She's right on point with that. And that's kind of why we started at the fourth grade. We purposely started our school at the fourth grade to capture these boys before it was too late. And so we capture them as they're coming into the fourth grade and try to catch them up. But you'd be surprised. You'd be heartbroken to know the numbers when we get these boys in fourth grade, what they're reading at. Over 60% of our boys, by the time they hit fourth grade, are reading at a kindergarten grade level. Percent of the boys we get in fourth grade are reading at a kindergarten reading level. And so we have work to do, you all. And that's why I say I want to open up. I want to go down to pre-K, but actually I want to open up, you know, collegiate top centers around the city, like preschools, to get them as little babies to get them start reading. Because children can read really young if you're purposeful and intentional in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so we got to get our boys at really, really young ages ready so that they can persist through school and they can read. By the time they get to fourth grade, I want our boys reading at fifth and sixth grade levels. So that's the mission that we're on. But we got to be around to do it first. So, okay. You know. That's,
all right. Dr. Wattis, did you want to say something? Okay. If you do, just unmute yourself.
One of the problems is Baltimore City Public Schools, I taught for 30 years. They are really afraid of your type of school because you're doing what they are supposed to be doing. And there's jealousy there, a lot of backstabbing and just pure downright jealousy. And it's a disgrace because it's a disservice to not only the children, but to the community, you know, because if you feed these children what they need, they wouldn't be out here like they are right now.
Right.
And it really hurts to see our children like this because it's not their fault.
No, they're babies. They're innocent little babies. But listen, y'all, listen, his was also deep, though. We got to own our own mess.
Yes.
I'm trying to tell you, too many of my boys come walking in the door in the morning smelling like weed, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not them smoking. It's who's bringing them to school mm-hmm. in the car with little boys. You know, so some of the problem is us. Like, you know, we're the ones who are raising the kids. The school system is only working with what you bring them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because you know, you're an educator. My mother was a 30-plus year educator. I'm a business person by trade, but I've always given back in the area of education to black boys.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, these children are a product of their environment, and they're bringing stuff into our environment that I'm, like, really sad for them. Because
yeah.
I can smell it, like when they're taking off their coat, you can get this woof, and you'd be like, wow, really? Or when it's nice weather and we're standing outside shaking their hands as they're coming in the building and the kids get out the car, you can smell it, you know, mm-hmm. coming. So you're like, man, we're some of our own worst enemies too. We got to stop
That's true.
What we're doing to our children, and we got to work together to raise them up. But Baltimore City Schools needs to be in this thing in partnership with us.
That's right.
Not in competition.
You know, go ahead, Dr. Wattis, go ahead.
I was just going to make a point. Also, we need to set an example. The kids are going to mimic what we do. Are mm-hmm. we reading? Are we looking at the papers? Are we looking at the next classical book? Are we reading anything? Are what example are we setting?
Absolutely.
Well, I had a comment. This is Cheryl Ritz.
Yes.
From what Brother Evan just stated about the parents, we know that they are uneducated, a lot of parents. So maybe what would help what we're doing for the kids is to put things in place where parents can say, you know what, I wanted to learn how to read, but I had to work a job, or, you know, I just didn't feel like I could. I know that, like my sister, for instance, I mean, one of my sisters, you know, she's gone back to school at 60 years old to get a bachelor's degree online. So it's like giving parents the opportunity to know it's not too late for you. Mm-hmm. You know, we have GED programs. We have all kinds of things. So just don't take the children out of a terrible environment, bring them into a good environment to thrive, and then send them back to an environment where they can't thrive. So things have to be in place for the parents too. We want us to do this in a community effort. We need to create villages. So having something for the teachers, something for the parents so that they can be taught, so they can learn and let them know it's not too late. I went back to college myself at 38 and then graduated with my bachelor's at almost 50. So letting parents know it's not too late. If you want to, you can, there's people, you know, to teach people how to read. They're programmed to teach adults how to read. We need to let them know that if their children are going to thrive and do better than they did, then they have to come up. We got to grow together. We don't grow in a vacuum. So just having things in place where we can help the parents. And even though parents may not be able to thrive in education at the level they may be at the moment, if we let them come in and get involved with whatever it is that you're doing in your school and other schools around the city, it's like, well, I'm off, or I'm retired, or I get disability, or I get social services. I'm going to come. I'm going to be present. I'm going to come and give my support to my child and other children. So just having a component where the parents are getting the help they need, help them to educate so they can understand why we're doing what we're doing with their children, so they can support that when they go back in the house.
Yeah, I think you make some fantastic points, Sister Ricks. It's something that we do have a long-term vision of, you know, we want to help the parents. We want to help them do better. We partner with organizations. There's an organization called Turnaround Tuesdays that we partner with. And Turnaround Tuesdays is not that all of our parents are like this, but it's an organization that deals with people who are coming out of the system, out of the correction system, and is helping them get their life together, teach them some skills, and then placing them in jobs so they can begin to start their life over again, helping them get education. And so that's like one of the organizations that we partner with, because we find that quite often a lot of our boys in our school have a parent or two that is under the penal system in the state of Maryland. Mm-hmm. And so you're right. That's very important. Not everybody is under that, but like we said, a lot of people can't read. A lot of people would really do well with some further education. And so that is something that we're looking to build on in the future. We just need to be around for a while.
Well, let me ask you a question. From where you sit, and you see a lot of things, you know, and plus you've been around the block once or twice. And, you know, in a perfect world, or if somebody can get in where they can fit in, what do you need to help you be even more successful?
Well, we always can use volunteers, right? People who come into school, who act as mentors, who can act as like support, all monitors, people who, you know, who can help be in the hallways as children are going in between classes, people who can tutor boys, people who have time to read to boys, things like that we definitely could use. My number two job is fundraising. I always have to keep raising more money. Though the way we're funded is on a per pupil allocation from the state, city, that the money comes through Baltimore City per pupil. We're paid. The things that we want to do to take them to the next level, some of the things I didn't get to tell you all about, the things that we do, is we take our boys globally. So when they come to our school, we expect them to always graduate with three things: knowing how to swim, having a passport, and knowing how to play chess. So all our boys get to learn how to play chess. We take our boys to learn how to swim, and then they get a passport. We take them around the world. So we've taken our boys class after class after class. We've taken them to England. We've taken them to Australia. We've taken them to Montreal, to Toronto. When the pandemic hit, we were about to take a group of boys to South Africa. This year, we wanted to take boys to Nigeria. Dr. Wilson wanted to take a group of boys to Nigeria, but right now they got a little bit of political unrest going on. So we're going to hold off on that, but we're looking at another opportunity for the boys to go to Italy. We take our boys because we try to make them global citizens. We want them to see themselves being able to go around the world. And so we raise money to help those families be able to send their children off. Now, we never make it totally free for them. Say if it's going to cost us $3,000 for a boy to go, we're going to tell that family their part is $1,200. And then we're going to go out and do our best to raise $1,800. But we want them to have skin in the game because people value things that they pay for, you know. But the experiences that their sons get are invaluable. So we're doing things. We're taking them to colleges for them to see it. At seventh grade and eighth grade, we want them to get on the campus and feel it and experience it. We take them to plenty of museums, to the symphony, to the zoos, to all that stuff. We want to expose them constantly. And so coaches for our teams, We always can use volunteers that coach for our teams. So things like that can really help with our boys and their development. So we're open to so many different ways that people can contribute their time, talent, and treasures.
Well, I'm not going to do it online, but I would like to talk to you personally how the National Black Unity Muse can help as well.
Okay.
And I'll talk to you about that later. But anybody else before we go, because I know brother, he's busy. Go ahead, brother, Dr. Leroy McKenzie. Yes, sir.
Brother Edwin, you talked about the front end, about the young boys in the third grade coming in, and you mentioned about pre-K. Is there a possibility for, like, partnerships with daycare centers? Like, my sister has a daycare center that goes from toddlers up to pre-K, and she has a program that she works with her kids that she has so that when they get into kindergarten, they're ready. They are reading at a kindergarten level, if not further than that. Is that something that would be able to assist you on that end as far as partnerships and everything?
I think it will, brother McKenzie, when we can expand down to the kindergarten level, because at her level, when she lets them go, they go to the other schools. We don't have the kindergarten, first, second, and third grades yet.
Right.
But that's my mission. And when we do, yes, I want to partner with as many preschools that are really dedicated to educating their little boys at young ages, and they'll be feeders into our school. So we're getting them already somewhat prepared and then taking them from there.
Okay. Now, when you all do your recruiting as far as the students, do you all have certain schools that you all work with in order to be able to bring them into your school once they get to that third grade level from the, you know, first and second grade level?
Well, we are a citywide school, right? So we got boys from Cherry Hill, Sandtown, Winchester, the east side, the west side. But when we do go out and do specific recruiting, we do try to go within a mile, mile and a half radius of our school, just because so it's easier for parents to get their children to our school, you know. But we still make the appeal to the entire city, because boys can come from all over the city to our school, but we know that we have less tardiness, less absenteeism the closer they are to our building. We're trying to recruit there.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, go ahead and shut it down, because, like I said, his brother been on a tour this last couple of days, and I know he's on a battlefield, but I want you to know, brother, you're not out here by yourself. I know you know this, but I truly appreciate for what you have done and what you continue to do. You know, you are a soldier man that need to be lifted up, not to be torn down by, you know, certain individuals for their own purposes. And we, us black melanated people, you know, we can't sit by, you know, enough is enough now. Right. This is direct and upfront, you know, and like I say, one child, just one child, it could be your grandchild, your nephew, your niece. If they don't have Edward Advent in their life, a school such as his in their life, that he can actually save their lives or even have a better quality of life. This is serious stuff, ladies. One child, he done with 400,000, you know, and they had the audacity to even think, you know, to do stuff like this. Is what bothers me so greatly, is that with a success rate like that, even had the thought of even trying to close them down. They shouldn't even, enter their mind compared to what they're doing with their own system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I don't even know that's Eric, it's 10 times, you know, I mean, I just can't understand that. But people will do to you as much as you allow them to do.
Exactly.
And until we stand up, this is not his fight. This is our fight, ladies and gentlemen.
This is our fight, y'all. This is our fight. I think any of us who've been sitting around, when we look at the news and our heart hurts and we keep saying, what can we do? What can we do? This is what we do. We go to action. We know why they're dying. It's because they're illiterate and they're hopeless. So we create solutions and then we go to work. So we don't sit there and opine about it and cry and moan. We get up and we go to work. And
that's
so we have something here, and that's what the school is. It's work to try and help this problem. And we just ask you all, if you don't have another vehicle to be able to help these young brothers that we see in the street, let Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys be that vehicle for you. And any little thing you do helps us. A phone call you do helps us. A letter you write helps us. If you show up and mentor, it helps us help these boys that were all bemoaning their fate. We can do something about it. And so I just want to say thank you again, brothers and sisters, for allowing me to chat with you all this evening. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I know you have other things on the agenda, but I just want to say thank you.
No. You was our agenda tonight. This was a call to arms night. You know, this is,
all right.
You know, we can talk about this and talk about that anytime, but this is extremely important and it's urgent.
Well, I thank you so much. Tomorrow, if you could be there tomorrow.
Oh, I will. Oh, you know,
tomorrow
like I said,
5 o'clock.
This is one fight. 25. This is one fight. You know, they say you have to pick your fight. This is one fight. You don't have to. I'm in the ring already. So,
all right.
But,
I appreciate you all. I really do. Thank you all so much.
And thank everybody for taking time to be with us this evening. And this, you know, this is it's being recorded and it's live on Facebook and on Blog Talk Radio. And this will go out. And so we're going to be sharing this all week. But I want to, before you depart, brother, you know, in warfare, we have people here, of course, in military and everything else. You know, this is just a battle. You know, the war, I don't care if they may win or we win, no matter what this, but the war is not over. You know, we ain't letting this go down. You know, you know, so just, you know, and I know you're a soldier, and I know you stand up. But, you know, I just want you to know you're not standing by yourself.
Thank you.
So I appreciate
your support. I appreciate all the prayers. Do we have any prayer warriors on here? Hey, brother, would you mind offering up a prayer? I'd love if somebody would offer up a prayer on behalf of our young men.
Well, I'm going to pick one person out here. Cheryl Ricks, can you do that for us?
Our Father God, we so love you, and we thank you for your unconditional love. We thank you for all that you've given us to do so that we can glorify you and make this world the same way it is in heaven, Lord. We just thank you for the battlefield that we have come through, the ones that we're in the moment, and the ones that we will get the victory over today. Lord, we just pray that you continue to unify us as a people, unify our hearts, and help us to know that we are all one. There is none, no little I's, no little U's, Lord. We all are being used for your glory. We all here to make the world better. We just ask that you would give us favor, give this wonderful school and wonderful mission favor before all the people that you need. Like we take everything out of the darkness and put light on it so they can see what they haven't been able to see the way they need to see it. We just ask that you would continue to give us favor with everybody that supports this wonderful school and mission. And we just ask that those people that are working and those people are forging ahead to make it possible to save our children, we ask that you would give them strength, grace, mercy, resources, help, and guidance and the strength that they need to get it done. We ask all these blessings in Jesus' name. Amen.
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 All right.
Thank you, brother and sister, and brother Avid.
We appreciate you, sir. Much love and respect, sir.
Thank you all.
I want to bid you all a good night. And tomorrow night, we'll be on at 7:30 with host Kathleen Murphy. So we encourage everybody to participate.
Mr. Murphy.
Yes.
But I just wanted to say that I wanted to let that gentleman know that I taught at the Baltimore City Detention Center for 7 years, and this school has been needed since the year before when I went there, because so many of our children, as he stated, were not able to read. But you know what? God had put me into pre-K, and I taught my children to read, and they were reading on at least a first grade level by the time they leave me, doing my songs and reading my stories and all the rest. So I would love to partner with him to work with his fourth graders. I am tutoring children right now, and I think that I can be very effective in helping him with some of his fourth graders that he may have that are really low readers. I can get them where they need to be. So please, if he could contact me, I'd be glad to work with him.
Sister Joy, thank you so much. I put my phone number. I think I put my email address. I'm going to put my phone number in right now in the chat for anybody to get it. But my email address is in there, and my phone number is in there. I'd love to chat with you and any assistance that you can provide our boys. I'd appreciate it. So thank you so much. Thank you so much. I see, Joy Ford. Let me write your phone number down too. Hold on for a second. 443.
I don't see your number, Mr. Evans.
It's there.
It's 349.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I sent it just to, I thought I had sent it to everybody, but it only went to India artists. I apologize. Let me.
That That number's wrong for me. It's 3492. Let me delete that and put it in correctly.
Okay.
Do that.
Let's see. I think that one just went to everyone, Miss Ricks. I think.
Okay. Yeah, it's there. It's out there.
Let me type it. Let me put it in before you change. Hold on, David. Don't do it yet.
Okay.
No. This is important. You know. Extremely important. And if you still don't have, you couldn't contact with me, and I'll get you this information that, you know, you can reach out to them.
Okay, mine is in there now.
Okay.
Thank you so much for sharing this evening. I really appreciate hearing about this.
Yeah.
And Brother Evan, and just so you know, anytime you want to come back on and share with us, man, because, you know, I'm going to tell you something about, we are soldiers. You
yeah.
know, and I mean, we are. And
I know,
the people on here, you know, they just not talkers, they are doers. You know, that's why they involved with the paper. You know, they about their work. And so anytime, man, when you know, just ain't got to be through trouble. Just come on and share, because, like I say, information is so powerful when we could connect those dots. And you play such an important part, an extremely part. You know, you taking care of our babies, man, you know.
Thank
especially
you.
Our young men, and if that don't affect everybody on here, I don't know what, you know, but in any case, we're there. I'm there. Okay. I'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you. Thank you.
All
right, Walla.
So, I'll see you. Take care. Y'all take care now.
Good night.
Everyone.
Have a good night.
Good night, all.
Everyone.
Bye-bye. You live for me, brother. You will hear from me.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
That concludes our broadcast for the night, and close out. One of my favorite theme songs is My Time. Jerry, think about it as not my time, but our time. Here we go. Up.
All right. Good night, people. Catch you back on the same channel, same station next week, Monday night at this time. All right. Good night.